NFL free agency is just 1 week away, but the dominoes are already falling. Lots to get into on today's CTB show. Thomas Pokornik and Christian Catanacci, as always. Cat, what's going on, man?
I'm doing good, Pac. I'm doing good. We're just under a week. Well, it's actually a week today when technically the free agent window will open. But you know how they do their legal tampering.
Which is pretty much the day where all the moves get done anyway. Yes. So usually by the Wednesday, we're just, okay, there's a couple guys left.
And they become official at 4 o'clock on Wednesday, right? So I don't know why they don't just say that free agency starts on Monday, but they call it quote-unquote legal tampering. But yeah, we're just under a week away, basically, before all hell breaks loose, right? Next week's going to be a very busy one. I'm sure there's going to be a ton of moves made and some moves that we won't discuss on the show because, quite frankly, we probably didn't see them coming. So yeah. I think it's shaping up to be one of those off seasons, and usually majority of that stuff gets done within the first 2 weeks of free agency. So I'm excited. I know you're excited. We got a lot of stuff to dive into today. Yeah, and I mean, we can get right into it with our boy Derek Carr. I hate to break it to you guys, but there's no jersey giveaway.
Yeah, no jersey giveaway.
No first ballot Hall of Famer giveaway, but
I guess, hey, initial gut prediction from both of us ended up becoming a reality. We both thought he was going to be a Saint when he was first sort of said, okay, he's out of Vegas. Then there was this whole Jets era. Obviously, last week I had my fun with the first ballot Hall of Famer stuff. It's not happening. He is going to the New Orleans Saints in a move that really, my thoughts are just kind of meh. I mean, the contract, nothing crazy, didn't reset the market. I honestly feel like with one of the contracts that was signed yesterday, Derek Carr could have gotten even more.
Absolutely.
But I guess well on the Saints for managing to maneuver that deal despite all the cap hell that they're in. I think the main thing here is that he goes from a division with Patrick Mahomes, Justin Herbert, and I'll even throw in Russell Wilson in that category because Russell Wilson would probably be the best quarterback in the NFC South. Into a division now that's likely going to see at least one of Kyle Trask or Matt Corral start at quarterback, or even Desmond Ridder. One of the three of those guys, I think, will start next year. Yes. Probably Ridder,
maybe even two of the three.
Yeah, I do think Carolina is going to draft a quarterback.
Yes,
but I mean, talk about a wide open division. Talk about a winnable division. I haven't looked far enough ahead to see who the Saints play on their schedule next year, but I mean, are they now division favorites? And I say division favorites, and I anticipate them maybe winning 8 games next year.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? You only really need 7 or 8 wins to be a quote-unquote division winner. So I think that's sort of the situation that we're in here. Again, I don't think Derek Carr is a bad quarterback. I don't think he's a great quarterback. Everybody knows that's sort of been listening to the show for a while, what our stance on Derek Carr is. But this move sort of, I don't know, I get sort of desperation out of the Saints. I get it. Sure, Derek Carr, he keeps you afloat for a couple years. But does he really give you that ceiling, like a Super Bowl winning ceiling? I don't think so. So, like, I don't get sort of the move here. I mean, sure, they're probably trying to capitalize on the division just being a little weak. Maybe they get into the playoffs. And at the end of the day, you never know what could happen, right? That defense is still very good. It can win them games. And Derek Carr is capable, right? He's never going to go there and duel out a quarterback and win the game for you just on his back sort of thing. So that's not the quarterback he is. But, like, does this really move the needle for me to say, oh, the Saints are now contenders? Like,
no.
I don't think so, right? So it's definitely a weird move. I mean, I could see the fit. Now, does this stop them from maybe trying to acquire a younger quarterback and have him develop underneath Derek Carr? Then that's okay. That could sort of swing me. But if Derek Carr is their plan for like the next 3-4 years and they're going to start quote-unquote building around Derek Carr, which their roster is filled with just aging talent, it's still a good roster on paper, but those guys aren't getting any younger, right? So is your plan to sort of take Derek Carr and try and get the most out of this roster for the next 3-4 years and then try and find your young quarterback? Or are you maybe next year going to make a move and have a young quarterback develop under Derek Carr until his contract is up? Again, this is sort of a fluid situation, and I can't really get a grasp on it yet. Do I consider them Super Bowl NFC South favorites? Probably, but like I mentioned at the beginning of this segment, like, what's that, 7 or 8 wins anyway? Yeah. So that's not really saying much.
Like, I feel like if Carolina can really hit on a good rookie quarterback, they can easily a higher ceiling than the Saints team. I don't know. Like you said, it is a bit of an aging roster. The weapons, like, last year Derek Carr had Davante Adams. He had Josh Jacobs, the number one rusher. We'll see. Like, Michael Thomas, to me, is like the ultimate X factor here, because when he was on his game, and this is now like 2-3 years ago, like, we're talking about a guy who was seen as the number one wide receiver in the NFL. Yeah, he set like records. 160
passes. Yeah.
and we just haven't seen that since. So can he sort of have a little bit of a rejuvenation? Because if he doesn't, I think this is a downgrade in terms of supporting cast for Derek Carr too. And if you look at the numbers last year that he put up with a better supporting cast and compare it to...
And a better play caller too, right? Say what you want about Josh McDaniels, but he's just a better play caller than what he's got in New Orleans.
I mean, and this is, this thing's a little bit unfair, but it is something that I had seen on social media comparing, or just taking a look back at the last time Derek Carr was with Dennis Allen, and it was just an absolute disaster in, it was Oakland at the time. But I don't know, Derek Carr's numbers last year, the Saints were getting the pretty much the exact same production from their culmination of quarterbacks. I don't know if you saw that graphic.
Yeah,
it was
I did.
Carr versus Dalton plus Winston plus whoever else threw the ball for New Orleans last year. Carr faced the Saints last year and was shut out 24-0.
Yeah.
Not great. I don't know. Hopefully they have a plan for him. Hopefully they can make this work. But like I said to start off, something that in a what I think is going to be a very busy offseason, I think this is going to be a move that we quickly forget because it is just such a meh move.
I agree. And you mentioned Michael Thomas. Michael Thomas might not even be on their team next year, right? Yeah. Like, they still got to get over the cap, right? So, or are under the cap, I should say. And I mean, they definitely got to make some moves, whether that's getting rid of players, restructuring contracts, like, you know, the New Orleans special, so sort of kick the can down the road. So I don't think this is going to be the Saints roster in terms of from outside of Derek Carr. So I feel like they still got moves to make, not so much acquiring talent, but getting rid of talent, because after all, they do have quite a bit of money to clear. And I think the first domino might fall with Michael Thomas. Who knows? Maybe by the time you guys watch the show, Michael Thomas might not even be a Saint anymore. But Derek Carr, I mean, Saints, sure. Saints fans are probably not going to be too happy about sort of our view. And again, that's totally respectable. At the end of the day, Derek Carr is sort of in the range of 15th, 16th best quarterback in the league. I mean, at spitballing, he might be a little higher, might be a little lower. But it is enough at this current point to win the NFC South, like you mentioned. If Carolina struggles to or is unable to find a young quarterback, then they're sort of out of the equation. I think the Bucs are sort of, I don't want to say they're tanking yet because I don't know what they're doing at quarterback, but if they roll a Kyle Trask, I believe that's sort of a tank job move. It's sort of under the rug.
Don't think they're bad enough to even with Kyle Trask, I don't know if that roster is bad enough.
It's still probably, like, they'll probably win 5 games with Kyle Trask.
Yeah.
Right? Which, I mean, it's not technically a tank job. But yeah, like we just mentioned, the division's wide open. 8 wins should get enough as of right now. So I guess Derek Carr moves the needle for the Saints to go from mid to midder. Midder? Yeah. Is that a word?
Not at all. Not even close.
Midder. So yeah, they're in the most mid division.
I wouldn't say the Saints, it stinks.
Yeah, it kind of does stink.
I think this division is worse than like the AFC South
or the NFC East that was like when
won? Like, because Washington, to me, that was disappointing, that division.
Yeah.
Like, Dallas should have been good that year. I think the Giants were like, even they were disappointing that year. Mm-hmm. This is that's the way that division went, that's the expectation for how the NFC North is supposed to go next year. I don't know. I hope the Dolphins got the NFC South in the rotation.
Got that rotation is probably laughing right now.
I think they just did that 2 years ago, so that's unfortunate. But whatever.
Well, speaking of the AFC East, you got the New York Jets.
Yeah, the goddamn Jets.
The Jets. I know Pac's not too happy seeing the news yesterday that the team officials are traveling to California to meet with, I guess it's confirmed now that Aaron Rodgers is outside of the darkness retreat.
Matt, who knows? They could be meeting in a hole.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe they're calling him. Does he get cell service down there? I'm not sure. I'd assume he doesn't get cell service. And I'm sure he's got a flip phone. He probably doesn't have an iPhone. But Aaron Rodgers actively communicating with the Jets. Again, this, I want to act surprised, but I'm not surprised because this felt like sort of the logical and almost like, okay, this is sort of the shoe-in destination of all. This is just going to happen, right? And there was a glimmer of hope for Derek Carr's camp, like we just mentioned, because there was some sort of talk there, like we mentioned in the show last week, the whole first ballot Hall of Famer with the Jets. But I think the Jets had their eyes set on Aaron Rodgers since the beginning of this whole thing. So what do you think about this? I would love to hear what a rival would have to think of Aaron Rodgers moving into their division, because I, at least from the outside, I look at the Jets roster and I don't want to say they're a quarterback away, but it's still it's a very, very talented roster. With that being said, the AFC East is a very good division. So we could be talking about three contending teams all from the same division when everyone's healthy, right? So Aaron Rodgers to the Jets, what do you think?
I think it is fair to say a quarterback away for the Jets. They play a nice brand of football. We saw last year when they had Breece Hall healthy how dangerous they could be on the ground. Their defense was a top five unit last year. And then Aaron Rodgers would come into an offense with a young stud receiver like Garrett Wilson and someone like Elijah Moore that I think could really, really put up some nice numbers if he's in a good situation with a quarterback that's actually targeting him, unlike Zach Wilson. The one thing I'll say that is a surprise to me is not the fact that maybe the Jets seem like the favorite all along. It's the fact that they're the only suitor. Like, that to me is a little bit surprising. Like, this, we're talking about a two-time MVP, Aaron Rodgers. Yeah, he's coming off a bit of a down year, but also wasn't in the greatest situation last year in Green Bay. This is sort of where I stand on it. This doesn't solve the Jets' problems long term. I don't even know if I said last week I predict he's going to retire.
I think he's got 1 year.
Is he fully in? I don't know. But if he does go to the Jets, I agree with you. I think he's going to give you 1 year. Then what do you do? Because are you prepared, a franchise that has this long playoff drought, a franchise that hasn't really been all that successful, you finally built this young core. Now you're going to have to take some risks to acquire a talent like Aaron Rodgers, and you're essentially going to have 1 year to go all in. It could very well work out. You could have a Los Angeles Rams situation, because you can argue they did the same thing. They had that one-year window, they won, and in comes the rebuild after that. But do you bring in Aaron Rodgers? Do you roll with him, and then after that, it's Zach Wilson again? Like, I think what the Jets need is a long-term option, and there's someone else, if I were them, that I would super, super aggressively pursue. I mean, we'll get to him in a little bit. I think it's fairly obvious who that is. But Aaron Rodgers, if he goes there, the ceiling becomes a lot higher. I don't know, maybe I'm a hater. I still think they are a touch below the Bills and the Dolphins.
I mean, I don't know. Again, Aaron Rodgers didn't have the greatest year last year. So what Aaron Rodgers are we getting, right? Like, are we getting the former Aaron Rodgers? We're just almost a year removed of this guy winning back-to-back MVPs. So he's still more than capable. Now, are we getting an Aaron Rodgers that's committed, that is interested in playing football and trying to get his team to the Super Bowl? Because I think it was clear that lack of interest wasn't there. Why was it? Was that because Green Bay wasn't good? last year, or I mean, they weren't ready. But when it comes to the future, I'll look at the Jets. At least their long-term option. Again, I think Aaron Rodgers got maybe 2 years, max 2 years left. So let's say he goes. Let's say he goes to the Jets for a year, 2 years tops. I think the move for the Jets long-term, again, Aaron Rodgers, I don't know if a lot of people know this, but Aaron Rodgers and Zach Wilson are actually very close friends. I don't know how that friendship started. I have no idea how this...
Like,
I don't know how...
older than me.
Right? I have no idea how that friendship started.
15 years apart.
But they have a friendship and a relationship there. So are you bringing Aaron Rodgers to be your quarterback for the next 1 to 2 years to sort of give you the best chance at reaching that Super Bowl, that even the playoffs? I mean, like this, like you mentioned, this is a team that's been so subpar for so long, and then it's sort of Zach Wilson's team again. Does he need to help develop Zach Wilson, and is that something that Aaron Rodgers would like to do? Again, it's almost like the Derek Carr situation where it's still so fluid, so you don't really know what exactly you're getting from Aaron Rodgers, right? Like, what does a trade compensation look like? Like, that's another thing. What do you think it would take to even acquire Aaron Rodgers? Like, are we talking a first, a two firsts, like a first and a second? Because it's no secret that Aaron Rodgers continues to mull retirement every single offseason. Yeah. So is a team going to be willing to go, oh, let's invest two first-round picks in this guy, and knowing that he could retire?
And then take a contract that's, you know, going to require $50 million plus, right, on the cap each year. I would demand a first-round pick. I would. I think two is a little steep. No first is just not enough. But I don't know, like, does it not feel like Green Bay sort of has more of the leverage here? Because if we look at Green Bay long term, they're content with rolling with Jordan Love, so they don't really care whether Aaron Rodgers is on their team or not. If they don't want to, you know, put up with his games, they could say, whatever, we're going to be difficult when it comes to trading you. And I don't know, like, or we can say, okay, we want to keep you, we're not going to trade you. So It is a weird situation. I don't quite know what to think of it yet. I do think this is going to happen, though. I do think he's going to end up being a New York Jet. I anticipate it happening fairly soon.
Again, you got another. You guys could be watching the show. By the time you watch the show, Aaron Rodgers could already be on the Jets.
I mean, the meeting is today, right?
Yeah, so.
Very, very strange. Personally, though, I touched a little bit about Green Bay. I want to talk about them a little bit more. I'm ready to watch Jordan Love.
I'm excited.
I've always been intrigued. You know, let's see what this guy gets. Like, let's remember, this guy came in a quarterback class with Joe Burrow, Tua Tagovailoa, Justin Herbert, Jalen Hurts. He was actually picked before Jalen Hurts in the draft. A lot of teams were very high on him in the draft process. But the one narrative around him was he has a lot of raw skills. It's going to take some time. Well, he's had a lot of time, and he's learned behind someone who is one of the best ever, and he has a head coach who has gone into the league at a insanely, you know, historic pace in terms of wins and regular season success in Matt LaFleur. So Jordan Love is in a situation that is, I think, could benefit him and could help him see a long career in the NFL. I'm very, very excited to watch the Jordan Love era if that's what ends up happening in Green Bay.
I'm excited, man, and I mean, you talk about a franchise that is so, so good at doing this with their quarterbacks. Like, Green Bay has had two quarterbacks in the last 20 years, right? And they were darn good quarterbacks. So I'm willing to roll the dice here that I think Jordan Love is going to be pretty good. Again, in his short sort of almost job interview with the Eagles this year, he played pretty good, right? So I almost want to say that this move is better for Green Bay. Just get sort of move off Aaron Rodgers. Again, one of the all-time great quarterbacks. I'm not discrediting what Aaron Rodgers is doing, but it's hard to just sort of bat an eye to it. Like, he's really becoming his mentor, right?
Yeah.
In the flesh. We're talking about Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers. Same two guys. Right,
yeah, it's very similar situation too, because I've read a lot of stories about the Brett Favre Aaron Rodgers days, and when Rodgers was drafted. They really didn't get along at first. And I'm not saying Rodgers and Love never got along. I actually think they have a very good relationship. But it's just that Rodgers was obviously pretty upset with the Packers for drafting Love in the first place. So it is cool how you kind of get that full circle moment.
And they're both going to play on the Jets. And yeah, right? Like we're talking like this is like, it's almost mirrored. Maybe 20 years from now.
Just wait till Rodgers goes to the Vikings when Kirk retires. Just wait.
We're talking about like literally mirrored situations here. And again, I think it's going to be a good move. The Jets, again, it's a New York market. The NFL would do better. Not like the NFL needs to do better, but the NFL would benefit having a superstar quarterback like Aaron Rodgers in a New York market. I mean, we're not getting that with the New York Giants.
Are you forgetting the Giants to sign the superstar?
Yeah. We'll get into that a little later. But Aaron Rodgers, I mean, talking with the Jets, they could be talking right now. Actually, no, this is a little too early by the time we're recording this. I don't know if Aaron Rodgers does seem like a guy that gets up at 3 o'clock in the morning and maybe goes to bed at six.
Yeah.
So they could be meeting right now. I don't know. Maybe the Jets team officials aren't morning guys.
It's 8:51 right now. Aaron Rodgers eating lunch with the Jets.
Yeah. Maybe they're eating lunch. Maybe he's housewarming him, showing him the hole that he stayed in the last four or 5 days. But fluid situation. Jets fans, I know you guys hate getting your hopes up because you guys had them crumbled for so long, but I think better days are ahead, at least in the short term. Next year or so, Aaron Rodgers will definitely max out the ceiling of this franchise going forward.
And who knows with the Packers, right? I mean, that NFC North, I think it's fair to declare it as quote-unquote wide open. Vikings were great last year, but is that success sustainable? Who knows? They could very well win a couple of
games. Depends
what
time the Vikings play their games.
Yeah, honestly, if it's at 1 o'clock, they might go 17-0. And then, I mean, I'm going to keep the Bears out of this conversation altogether, but the Lions are touted as this young and up-and-coming team. Sure, they might win more games next year, but I don't think they're definitively better than anyone else. Mm-mm. So if Jordan Love can show that he has a real future and is a solid starter in the NFL, I think the Packers can very well still compete in the division despite moving off of their legendary franchise quarterback. So this is a situation that just brings about all different kinds of exciting storylines. We'll obviously keep monitoring it, but like you said, could very well be resolved in the next couple hours. We'll go to something that the word resolved just seems like we're never, ever going to be able to say it. Yeah. And that's with the Baltimore Ravens. How many times do I have to come on this show and complain about the Baltimore Ravens? I hope this is the last time. Franchise tag deadline was yesterday. They tagged Lamar with the non-exclusive tag, which I remember when you first sent me that report, I was like, what are they doing? You sort of explained it to me. I've read a little bit about it. I actually think it's now, you know, when thinking about it, it is a very smart move.
Yeah, from a business standpoint.
Yeah.
It probably pissed off Lamar a bit, but
I mean, I don't think he was going to play on either tag, the $45 million one or the $32 million one. I think he is going to get a deal. And I stand by my take. I think there is no way he plays in a different uniform next year. I still believe the Ravens will do whatever they can to retain him. It's just unfortunate that despite them wanting him so badly, it's taken this long to come to a resolution.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's frustrating, and it's frustrating for me, and I'm nowhere close to a Baltimore Raven fan and someone that follows the team. I mean, that's sort of our job, but it's almost like pissing me off to the sense that, like, if I was a fan, I'd be livid. Like, I would be freaking out. And I mean, non-exclusive franchise tag. So basically, for those that aren't aware of what it means, it's essentially the Baltimore Ravens go, okay, Lamar, clearly we're just off here. So we're going to franchise tag you, but you can go talk to other teams. And if you negotiate a contract that you agree to with that other team, you bring it back to us and we sort of have the first right to match that deal. And if Baltimore decides to not match that deal, the team that Lamar Jackson had sort of signed with, quote unquote signed, because it's not technically an actual contract yet, would give Baltimore 2 first-round picks. So a first round pick this year and a first round pick next year. And if you look at just from a trade perspective, if Baltimore were to just trade Lamar Jackson, they would get more.
They would get four first-round picks at least, right? plus more.
We're talking about Russell Wilson last year went for a boatload. Plus, he went for like five picks plus three players.
Deshaun Watson,
right? So we're talking, and this guy's clearly better than those two quarterbacks. And so that makes me think almost this is sort of a move from Baltimore saying, okay, clearly we can't get this done, so we're going to let another team write our contract for us, and we're just simply going to match it. I think that's sort of the move, at least on paper. I don't know. Maybe. I don't know if the Baltimore front office has much competence. Listening to what the players have said and over the last couple of weeks makes me believe that maybe there's a chance that he could leave, but I think that's all it's really going to come down to. I think a team's going to say, hey, Lamar, okay, let's negotiate a contract. Boom, boom, boom. Years, 4 years, and they guarantee whatever amount of his money is. And sort of Baltimore goes and looks like it. Okay, sure. Yeah, whether that's closer to Lamar's asking price or their asking price, they're going to say, told you so. One of the sides are going to say, told you so. Boom, signed, match the deal. Lamar is a Baltimore Raven.
Yeah, I don't understand why it's taken so long. I don't understand why there's still room to grow between both sides in this negotiation. But the one thing I will say is there is no world that exists where the Baltimore Ravens spend a whole year trying to get a deal done with Lamar, place this tag on him, let another team negotiate a contract, even if it's $55 million a year, fully guaranteed, and the Ravens sit there and say, you know what? Let's just take the two first-round picks for him, even though we could have gotten four plus more on the open market just a couple weeks ago. That world does not exist. I'm sorry. Lamar's not going to sign this tag. He is going to sign a contract, whether the Ravens smarten up and finally fork up that guaranteed money that he wants, or a team like whoever negotiates with it, he signs with them, and then the Ravens will absolutely match. But that brings us to our sort of next point. The teams that we thought would have been lining up for Lamar immediately, and we always talk about insiders, reporters getting news out. Oftentimes it's because the teams want that news out there. Falcons, right away, we won't be pursuing him.
The Falcons Twitter account, this is the first time I've seen this.
The Falcons Twitter account?
The Falcons team Twitter account retweeted a tweet saying they will not approve. They will not pursue. I've never seen that happen
that,
before.
That instruction like comes from
the owner
above. Like, you oh, hey, let right? me get in touch with the social media department because I want them to retweet this message.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just was so I was so mind blown when I saw that on Twitter yesterday. I was on my Twitter before I went to bed, and I saw Atlanta Falcons retweet. I'm like, what? And I clicked this, and it was literally just a beat reporter's report saying the Atlanta Falcons will not pursue, and then it was a link to his article. I was like, there's no way they just...
Was it like a
this.
Team? Because sometimes these teams like write these articles on
no,
their own
it was
website.
Not. It was not. I'm going to continue on your point, Puck, because I got to pull this out. And it was the most outrageous thing that I've ever seen, and it's still out there.
Anyways, man. I just like... The Falcons are out. The Dolphins said they're out. The Commanders, the Raiders, the Panthers.
Look at
all
this.
These destinations.
Look at this. Atlanta Falcons retweeted from Scott Blair NFL reports, Falcons will not pursue Ravens quarterback Lamar Jackson. And it's literally...
It is a team article, though. But that's weird, too. They wrote the article on their team website.
Usually, they would post it from the team, and then they would sort of...
That's
exactly. Another thing. They posted it from their team website. So weird.
Like, if you go on the Falcons website, there's an article saying, we will not pursue Lamar... I've seen teams write weird articles about themselves in the past. That's super weird. Anyways... It begs the question. Obviously, the league views Lamar as an elite quarterback. I hope so at this point anyways. Why aren't teams lining up? I have my theory. I believe you have your own theory as well. Because all these teams that are saying they're out on him, other than the Miami Dolphins, should really, really want a guy like Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
So why do you think they're out?
I'm gonna put my theory, my conspiracy theory hat on here. And I believe that the owners are banding together because they want nothing to do with this guaranteed contract, fully guaranteed contract era, and they want it as far away as possible, whether that's kicking the can down the road, but they do not want it in the NFL right now. And sort of Cleveland opened the floodgates with it last year with Deshaun Watson. Now, if the owners sort of succumb to his demands and give him this 100% fully guaranteed contract, whether that's $250 million, $300 million, whatever it is, the point is, later on down the line, you know how sort of quarterback contracts work. So, next negotiation, heck, this offseason, if you're telling me that if Lamar gets 100% fully guaranteed contract, Joe Burrow, Jalen Hurts aren't going to ask, why is he getting 100% guaranteed contract? I want $300 million guaranteed. Then next thing you know, five years down the road, you're giving $500 million guaranteed to one player. Think about the liability from an owner perspective. That's a lot of money to just fork up and say, okay, here, it's yours no matter what you do. And yeah. I think it brings a little bit of, again, that's a whole different topic because you look at what sort of contracts are in the NBA nowadays and how players sort of take days off because they want to. I'm not sure if that will ever come to the NFL, but when a player knows that they're guaranteed their contract, if it's the wrong sort of mindset, they could really take advantage of that. And I think from this sort of example in itself, the owners are really banding together to sort of say, look, we all know that this guy wants 100% guaranteed contract. We're not doing that. And they're setting an example to the league using Lamar Jackson, which is unfortunate. But again, these guys are the more powerful. It's their team at the end of the day. So if they're not wanting to do something, they could very easily band together. And I think that's what they're doing, saying, no, we want nothing to do with this $100 million, 100% guaranteed contracts.
Like, I sort of get it. My whole thing is, though, think of a franchise like the Washington Commanders. You're sort of down in the dumps. You haven't had that star player in a while. If you were to commit $300 million to Lamar Jackson, in my eyes, the value of your franchise now increases upwards of $500 million, maybe even more, because you have the ultimate ticket, the ultimate attraction in Lamar Jackson, where fans who were previously discouraged, not really invested in the team, are now all in and willing to pay top dollar to go watch a guy like Lamar Jackson week in and week out because he is such an awe. He is such an attraction. So, I don't know. I get it. The culture of quarterback contracts would really suffer going forward when you talk about even immediately Joe Burrow, Jalen Hurts, Justin Herbert.
Justin Herbert.
It would. But at the same time, a desperate owner. Look at the Carolina Panthers. They need a franchise savior. I think it, like the Cleveland Browns did it last year. That's mm-hmm. why we're here, because they were desperate and they bit that bullet. I think desperation sometimes will overcome that. And I'm a little surprised because I don't think that's quite the reason why these teams aren't going in for Lamar Jackson. I think it ultimately comes down to one thing. In other sports, we see this often when there are restricted free agents, and it's a similar situation in terms of draft pick compensation. You will have to pay the other team if the deal is agreed to and the team has a chance to match. It essentially is just not a headache for the other team. It kind of just bothers them. You get on the wrong side of that GM, that owner. If the Carolina Panthers are going to offer big money to Lamar, Baltimore Ravens are kind of going to look at them and say, you know, why are you sticking your neck in our business? And let's be honest, these teams are smart. They know the Ravens are going to match whatever. There's no world that exists where the Ravens let this guy walk for just two first-round picks. So if I'm the other team, I'm going to say, like, you know what?
Save your time.
I would love Lamar Jackson, yeah. But it's a pipe dream. I'm very, very limited in terms of time I have negotiating with players. And the quarterback situation is the number one priority. If I spend all this time negotiating with Lamar Jackson just for the Ravens to match, which they will, I'm now behind the 31 other teams, or not the 31 other teams that are looking for a quarterback, but let's say the 20 other teams that are looking for a quarterback, because it feels like there's that many every year. I'm now behind, and I didn't do my homework on the drafted guys. I didn't do enough research on the other guys in free agency. It's just something that it is, at this point, looks so unattainable.
Yeah.
And I mentioned earlier that I think the Jets should be all over this. And, I mean, the Jets would really, really benefit from a guy like Lamar Jackson because it helps them now and it helps them long term. I just think it's very difficult the way this contract is set up for a team to actually go and nab him from the Ravens.
Yeah, I agree. I think, it is time consuming. Clearly, they've been trying to do this for like 2 years now. So I don't know if it would get any easier. It's obviously tough to negotiate with a player that has no representation. That's another thing and another hurdle that a lot of people don't sort of think about when they talk about the situation. Like, the reason why the agent is there is because there's a lot of hard things that are said in negotiations, right? Like, at the end of the day, it's a business. So two sides are trying to get their value up and the other side's trying to bring it down. So for a player to sort of be in that negotiation and listen to what is being said, it could ruffle some feathers. So I think a lot of people aren't... we're going to go right into this sort of Daniel Jones stuff. Because I have an example that a lot of people, I guess, I have no idea why it's sort of said nowadays on social media, but Daniel Jones. So the Giants buzzer beater, like we're talking buzzer beater. The deadline was at 4 o'clock yesterday. And I think this contract came in at 3:53 PM Eastern time. So 8 minutes to go, 7 minutes to go until the franchise tag deadline. They extend Daniel Jones 4 years, $160 million contract. And then they franchise tag Saquon Barkley. So a lot of people are going, Daniel Jones thinks that he's a $40 million quarterback. Daniel Jones isn't in these negotiations. That's his agent. Like, Daniel Jones probably golfing somewhere, right? Or working out. Players, more often than not, we're talking 95% of the time, are not in negotiations.
And I do think he has a say there. Yeah, but absolutely. Yes.
But yeah, the agent is so persuasive. You don't know how persuasive an agent is. At the end of the day, he's making a percentage. So he wants as much for his client so he can make more money for himself. So Daniel Jones, sure, yeah, he probably has money inside. Oh, yeah, it would be nice to make $35, $40 million. But if it was up to the player, especially I feel like a guy like Daniel Jones, and he had no agent, he would probably be signed already for $35 million. Yeah, he would cave. Right?
The organizations are more trained. They have their trained negotiators too. So
my point being is when people say, oh, Daniel Jones thinks he's worth $40 million. No, that's what his agent's asking for that. Like, Daniel Jones isn't in the negotiations. Sure, yeah, he's actively talking with his agent, but his agent is representing him. That's the whole point of an agent, right? You do the dirty work for your client. The client is sort of off. Yeah. Like, look at all these... Whenever there's a video that's done, it's always the guy getting a call saying deal's done. Yeah. So the guy's not there, right? I don't know how clear it has to be, but I mean, Giants, they got their guy. It's sort of set up like a 2 year deal where they could get rid of him after 3 years. I was looking more into it because you can't really take a contract at face value anymore. So it seems like it's a pretty solid deal. I don't think Daniel Jones necessarily presents the highest ceiling for a team, but it keeps them afloat. I don't think this stops them from finding a young guy, and if the time is right and the sort of dominoes fall in the proper way to sort of have him develop behind Daniel Jones. But it's hard to sell your fan base on the idea of they're trying to get better if they don't bring back Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley, which they did with the franchise tag.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to ask you before when you were talking about all the negotiation stuff. You ever been in contract negotiation before?
No, but I would probably be a good...
Yeah?
I'd probably be a good agent.
When I was 16 years old, my first ever job, I was a dishwasher at a golf course making minimum wage, and it was slave labor, and me and my buddy went to the chef. Everyone had quit. We were the only guys left. Me and my buddy went to the chef, and we're like, listen... You can pay us minimum. Like, if you're going to keep paying us minimum wage, you got to find someone else. Like, we literally told them, like, pay us more or we're quitting. And it was like the biggest, like, back and forth or whatever. And my buddy was kind of served as my agent because the chef rose my price just a little bit and I would have been, okay, I'll take it. And my buddy said no. He looked at him and said, no, we still want more. And we ended up getting more. So sometimes you got to stick to your guns. I obviously wasn't tough enough to keep going and try to wait out the player. But my agent, my buddy was, and we ended up getting more money.
So if there's any NFL players that need an agent, you got Pac's
yeah,
buddy.
Yeah, yeah. That's a great agent. Bring him in, man.
So, you did what Daniel Jones would have done. You would have caved.
I would have caved. I was like $15 an hour. My buddy ended up getting me, what, maybe a dollar more, 50 cents more an hour, which is...
It adds up. It adds up. That's what an agent's supposed to do.
Anyways, right? Guy like Danny Dimes, we started calling him Danny Dollars. Then I started calling him Danny Too Many Dollars. Listen, it's a rich contract.
Yes.
But did we expect anything else?
No.
This is what happens. I remember Derek Carr was once the highest paid quarterback in the NFL. Matthew Stafford was once the highest paid quarterback in the NFL. Daniel Jones had a good season last year. This is the going rate for quarterbacks. And like you said, you have to dig deeper when it comes to these contract details because teams structure these deals.
They're smart ways.
Yeah, they're very smart. I don't know if you read how the Seahawks did Geno Smith deal, but he's getting $52 million in year one.
Yeah, in like calendar year one. Mm-hmm. So that spans over a little more than a season, but it's in a full year, he's going to be making $52
million. But it's smart for them to front load it because they have a young roster.
Yes.
So now if he's not great, they can move off on him, take less dead money, and then still be able to pay some of their young guys who are going to get more money in future years. So, like, a lot of people were saying this is way too much. What are the Giants doing? I honestly don't really have a big problem with this. I think it was smart to retain Daniel Jones. And if you give any quarterback a second contract now, any starting quarterback, the going rate is $40 million a year. Yeah. It's crazy that Mahomes only gets 45. I've said it before. This is the best contract in North American sports. And it will continue to be as the deal goes along. But good for Daniel Jones. If I'm a New York Giants fan, I guess I would be happy. I don't know. Like,
yeah, you have stability. I think it gives you stability as a franchise. Does it present the high ceiling like I mentioned just a few minutes ago? I don't think so. But it's the right move for the future outlook of the New York Giants, right? I think it's clear to say that Daniel Jones isn't going to be this franchise quarterback in 5-6 years. But it offers them stability to sort of get the team around him a little bit better and then eventually, when the time is right, move on to a very young, high-ceiling, talented quarterback prospect and have Brian Daboll mold him into the quarterback that he wants to be. Because Brian Daboll is a wizard, right? Like, this guy is... We saw the work he did with Josh Allen. We see the work he's doing with Daniel Jones right now. So we're talking about a coach that's so capable. So all the GM really has to do is focus on getting the team better, keeping the team afloat, build that culture, and then when it's time to really go all in on a young guy, they're able to do so. And I don't think that time is yet. So they could keep competing with Daniel Jones and get into the playoffs. And, I mean, there's not much that presents after that, but at least it's good enough.
I mean, you never know.
You build a culture. NFC. Yeah, you never really know.
And I think Daniel Jones deserves... For example, we saw Jalen Hurts take this massive jump after getting A.J. Brown, and he already had Devontae Smith before that. Daniel Jones has nowhere close to any of a caliber of player as those two receivers. So get this guy some weapons now. He's earned that. He's under contract now long term. Show him that we're going to put you in an even better position to succeed. I really hope the Giants go all out. And, I mean, last time they went all out in free agency, it resulted in Kenny Golladay, which is just one of the worst free agent deals ever. But maybe go get DeAndre Hopkins. Like, maybe make a trade to grab someone. Yeah. Maybe target someone young in the draft. I mean, they don't have the highest pick, obviously. But do something here to make sure that no one is able to say you're overpaying Daniel Jones. Because I think the key is here, if you surround him with better talent and he has a little bit of a better year than he did this year, just a little bit better, he's definitely worth that $40 million.
Yes.
Because, like I said, show me a starting quarterback that will sign for less than that today. Show me one.
It won't happen.
Every
contract after that's going to be above $40 million. Yeah. And we're talking about 5-6 quarterbacks that are due like top of the line money, right? We're going to be talking, we might even have a contract that reaches upwards of 55, 56, 57 million a year. So just this offseason, right? We're with Hurts, with Burrow, with Herbert. One of those guys are going to get a boatload of money. So it's going to happen. Daniel Jones, buzzer beater. We got a lot to talk about. Next week's going to be very busy. Very busy. We got a lot in the agenda. We hope you guys enjoyed this show. We're going to try and do some live streams during free agency. We did it last year. Whether that's on Instagram, whether that's on YouTube, we don't know yet. So stay tuned for that. We'll see you guys next week. And maybe it'll be more than one show next week. We don't know, depending on how much actions is going on in free agency. But that'll wrap us up for today. I hope you guys have a fantastic day and do all that fun stuff. Like, comment, subscribe, all that stuff. And we'll see you guys next week.
Later, guys. Take care.